Dobner's Vaccine. I'm Steve, and joining me today, America's number one Maestro fan. It's Adam Myros.
Boy, I wish I'd seen that movie so I could know whether to be insulted or not.
Well, I mean, Bradley Cooper's got some old man makeup on. He's talking like if Bob from Bob's Burgers was in His Girl Friday. And I don't know. There's some cool scenes. And by some, I mean, there's like legitimately two good scenes in the whole movie and the rest is kind of trash. But in the very last like 30 seconds, Bradley Cooper looks exactly like a sweaty post-match Ric Flair. And he's sexually dancing at the club with a young gay black man. So that's my scene of the year, but fuck the rest of the movie.
Yeah, I mean, two good scenes in a Best Picture nominees. Usually that's a pretty high average, I would say. You know, that's not
right. Bad. It's clearing the bar.
Yeah,
I will say though, looking at the field of Best Picture, and this is going to drop obviously after the Oscars air, but I'd say when we watched the 1984 AVN Awards, we watched at least two or three pornos that were head and shoulders above half the field for the Best Picture nominees. So something to think about there. Also joining us, he's America's biggest NIAID fan. It's Jack Eason.
Oh yeah, I'm big fan of the NIAID. Lover for swimming and whatever else the film is about. I think it's mostly swimming. I think that's it.
Yeah, what?
You don't
vote for Jodie Foster and her little movie? You can suck on these NIADs. That's what I get to say to you, pal.
That's probably, they should put that on the poster for people who are it's wild they can put Oscar nominated on a poster for a movie that's like, what is this? But then again, you don't need a poster because Netflix acquired it, so it's not a real movie anyway.
Do you want to, so I'm thinking about like an astroturfing campaign that we should start. So just let me know if you're on board. So like, obviously, when Greta Gerwig didn't get nominated for Best Director or whatever the fuck, and everybody got all mad about Barbie, and you know they're like, "Oh no, feminism!" and we didn't break the glass ceiling because it's there, it is, and Barbie only got nominated for 800 other things, didn't get Best Director. What if we flip that on its head and we start a campaign talking about how NIAID was robbed across the board? And that's the real feminist text, because it's about ladies taking a swim, right?
Yeah, I mean, I think it could work, but there's two issues. Firstly, and they're kind of the same issue, and the issue is essentially that no one has watched that movie. And that works in your favor, because you can really trump it up, and no one can say whatever you say is in the movie. No one can say it isn't in the movie. But the flip side of that is that it's hard for people to get excited about a movie that literally no one has seen.
Yeah, that's, I thought about this. And for the record, too, I don't plan on watching it, so I'm not going to actually know anything. But I think if we get like one of those like buckle in, sweeties, and then the little thread emoji, and then we just give them like 27 tweets in a row.
Oh, yeah.
And then people won't read it, but they'll smash that retweet. We got to get NIAID fever is going to be.
Oh, I think so. I'm just impressed that we already covered all this hardcore pornography to avoid the Oscar nominees, and then you just woke up this morning and chose Maestro.
I did choose Maestro.
The
thing is like I watched like 80% of the Best Picture nominations. So then I had like three left, and all three I'm like, I don't know how much these are going to be for me. And it was Past Lives, Maestro, and American Fiction. And would you believe none of them were for me? But I don't know. I just feel like I had to finish it. Just like what we're watching or what we watched for this week's episode. Because, a younger Steve, a different Steve, I would have watched the first Prophecy movie. We're talking about the 1995 Christopher Walken Prophecy movie. I would have watched that and said, not for me. Not for me. I should probably just pass on the rest of this franchise. And yet, because we are who we are, what did we watch for this week? Why? We watched the Prophecy trilogy. And I think there's going to be some people out there banging their fists, maybe some nerdy Prophecy fans who are like, Excuse me, sir. Or wait, let me get their voice.
Excuse me, sir. There's actually 5 prophecy movies, and it would be in your best interest to watch 4 and 5 because they're actually some of the stronger entries. Shut the fuck up. All right, listen.
Yeah, it'd be in my best interest to not have watched any of these movies.
Yeah, point one, you don't need these. You don't need these. There's a lot of worse shit out there, but there's a lot of better things out there. You do not need these in your life. Point number two, the entire impetus for this episode was Jack and I sitting with prophecy box sets, saying to ourselves, "What do we got to watch these? I can't. This is a box of movies. We got to watch this shit." And then point number three, and this will calm the nerds, is I looked into 4 and 5 because I thought, I got some time. I'll do a little extra homework if I need to. Turns out I don't need to, because none of the main characters or even the side characters are reprised for 4 and 5. And the storyline itself, therefore, is completely separated from this original trilogy. They are prophecy movies only in name and angel shenanigans. So. Jeez. I don't feel a moral obligation to watch part 4 and 5.
So is Walken not even in 4 and 5?
No, there's no Walken.
Okay, yeah, if you can't get Walken back, then you're dead in the water. And as we're going to discuss, like, the big issue with Prophecy 1 through 3 is that they barely have a story. So the concept that 4 and 5 just go off and don't fill in anything is, wow. This is a real, don't watch these movies. Just don't bother.
I mean, I guess part 4 has Doug Bradley as the bad guy.
Yeah,
I don't know. Oh, shit, now I have to go watch it for other reasons.
Yeah, fucking Pinhead shit.
Yeah, one of them has Doug Bradley and the other has Tony Todd.
Yeah.
So they just pulled another kind of horror legend, which is weird because it's not like, are these horror movies? Undecided, unclear.
They seem to think they are. I'm not quite sure what any of them are because it's not like action horror. Myros, I think you mentioned Underworld at some point.
Yeah.
The films of the Superior Wiseman, Len Wiseman, that might be a good analog to what we're talking about today. But even then, it's like, I feel like the Underworld films they've got like horror window dressing, but they're largely action films. And these all move at like a snail's pace.
Oh, yeah.
So the action comes in very short bursts. The horror, in my mind, is almost non-existent. There's not a lot of drama. It's a formless film in a lot of ways. I don't know if it's any of these things.
It's incredible because, I mean, I think, you know, what's the ultimate angel film? And I think certainly got to be up there is Wim Wenders' Wings of Desire, which has a very specific kind of a glacial pace to it. A kind of, you know, the angels are at a remove. That's part of it. And then one of them comes down and embraces humanity. And that's, you know, the whole movie. And there's that tension between the unchanging world of the angels versus the very kind of upset, kind of tempestuous, if that's even a word, world of the humans. And I feel like the prophecy splits a difference by just basically making genre movies, but as if an angel was watching them indifferent. They don't do anything. I think 2 and 3 are nominally action movies more than even 1 is. Like 3 is Koichi Sakamoto of, Alpha Stunt Team fame, Drive, one of our favorite, Optimus Vaccine's favorite 90s action movies. Indeed, Brittany Murphy, who had a role in Drive, is in part 2 of these. You feel like that's what they're winging for, but like the action is like very strong TV action, you know, kind of like a close up of some coats being shaken in front of a camera, and then we're off to something else, and one man on a wire jumping over a fence. These are just what I'm so disappointed about these films is that honestly, these movies have been in my consciousness for years. Cause like every time you go to the video store, it was always The Prophecy with Christopher Walken on the car. And I always felt like Christopher Walken. I've long time been a Walken fan. I mean, you know, ever since I saw Deer Hunter when I was too young, I was like, there's a odd looking dude who's weirdly intense. And you know, that seems like, you know, even good acting, bad acting, it doesn't matter. It's Christopher Walken. He's him. And these movies seemed so promising to me, and I just never, ever got around to them until I got this trilogy dumped on my doorstep. And so I'm like, all right, let's finally, you know, 30 years too late, let's find out what this is about. And I sat down and watched them, and they are every one of them is basically kind of a slightly different shape of dud.
Yeah, I think I'm the only one who had any experience going in, and that's just because it was on cable or something. And probably when we had like one of those stupid super deluxe cable packages where you get like 75 Starz channels, and Prophecy was on, and I was like, well, that's probably a real movie, right? Christopher Walken, I've heard of it. And it didn't take long for me to go, oh, this is not in fact a real movie. I'm going to turn it off and watch something else.
Yeah, it's it is weird because it is something that I never watched, but it feels like you said, Jack, it was always just ambiently I was aware of it in the video store. And then you would catch bits and pieces like the premium channels that you'd get for free for a weekend twice a year, or, you know, TNT on a Sunday afternoon. And it really it does kind of have that look. I think the first movie is significantly better looking than the two sequels, but it really does have this kind of flat made for TV Law and Order episode lighting look to it. And it is also unrepentantly dorky and stupid, which I respect. And I think a little bit of that gets lost in the two sequels, but in the first Prophecy, it should be noted, these are the first Prophecy movie. We're not talking about the fucking Frankenheimer one, okay? So get that out of your head. I wish we would have watched that.
Yeah.
It's written and directed by Gregory Wyden, which means nothing to 90% of people. But Gregory Wyden is the man who wrote The Highlander, okay? So that's the level of dorkiness that we are dealing with. And I can see why a studio would be like, yeah, let's fucking go with this guy, because Highlander was very successful despite being goofy as shit. And it is, it's pretty solid. It's a silly movie. It has roughly 9,000 sequels that they were cranking out at a very rapid pace around this period of time. And there was a pretty successful television series. So you're a studio. Greg Wyden comes to you. He says, hey, I wrote this fucking angel bullshit, and I want to direct. Let's do it. You get this great cast. Sure. Virginia Madsen, Christopher Walken, Elias Koteas, who's fucking horrible, I should mention, in this. So you got the great, like, all these pieces are here for something that should be a little bit more serviceable than what we get. And the thing that I can't shake is, yes, this is a movie about angels and there's a war in heaven, but all of the interesting bits are sort of, they're just exposition. They're in this like background lore that we're not really privy to. And then all the things that are happening in the movie on Earth, it's just boring bullshit.
Yeah.
And to kind of go back to that Len Wiseman underworld comparison, this feels like a vampire movie to me. Like, with very few changes and flourishes, it feels all vampire-y. Even their little tricks that they do, like, oh, you have to kill them in a very specific way. And the little angels, they like doing this thing where they kind of do a little hop and they stand on the back of a chair or something, or on top of a dresser. And it's very vampire-like. So that just complicates it further and makes it weirder for me. But yeah, it is utterly bizarre that this is a movie where very little happens and there's no stakes, but everyone seems to think that everything is so fucking important, and it's maddening. I feel like I'm watching something and there's an expectation that I'm getting something else. It's really odd.
Yeah,
and it sucks, honestly.
The issue, I mean, the first one certainly is the most generously apportioned horror effects. We have some pretty good makeup stuff, some pretty good, they do these little glimpses of, I guess, the war in heaven. It's just bodies piled up and in some lightning flashing stormy sky. You know, it's kind of, it's only glimpse for seconds here and there. But yeah, it's really big brained stuff. I mean, you're talking about how this unceasing war that's been happening in the background, humanity's just been ticking along, and there's this war in heaven, and there's all these consequences. Like, apparently no human has made it into heaven since the angels rebelled against God. And they did this because God has chose man as his favorite. And so the angels, some of the angels rebelled against him for that, outside of Lucifer, who already did it previously. Other angels did it. And I was like, all this stuff's like, fair enough. Okay, great. But you can't just tell me there's a war in heaven. We have to, like, what is heaven? What does the war there look like? What happens? Who are the factions? What happens if one wins over another? How do angels fight God? What does this look like? What is any of it? And basically, like, the film is just like angels, which, I mean, it's an online meme at this point. Angels whose visage is so cosmically insane that it will just destroy the mind of a human if they see them. Yeah, it turns out angels are just dudes in trench coats with longer than average hair. That's every single angel in this movie is basically just
they
a dude.
They kind of look like Highlanders, to be honest.
Very similar to Highlander. Yeah. And that's the movie. It's just angels going around doing vague magic tricks and then just like jumping from high things and surviving. And it's three movies.
And in the course of three movies, I still have no idea what the consequences of this war are. And that is just such a fundamental thing. Like, why do I care who wins? Just because this guy is positioned as the protagonist and this guy is positioned as the antagonist. So I guess you're supposed to root for the protagonist. But what happens if the antagonist succeeds? Fuck if I know. You would think that would be pretty fundamental to the storytelling. And even if it doesn't fit into this ropey ass Highlander first movie, then you would get to it if you're going to bulk it out with a franchise. But no, we never get to it. Like, I don't even know if this is, I guess it's ostensibly Christian, but this sort of mythology of a closed heaven, it would almost seem like more Judeo, like it's as if Christ was not the savior, and so we still are not allowed into the gates of heaven. But I don't know. In the first movie, we're asked to side with Satan himself, and in the second and third movie, I don't know. Is this child the Antichrist? Maybe
it's very maybe. Unclear. Yeah. Well, Christopher Walken changes role too, because he starts off as the antagonist and then he kind of becomes helpful. He just basically the Terminator. Like part two is literally the Terminator, but with angels. And Walken swaps over to becoming a good guy kind of by the time we get to part three. But as Adam says, without stakes laid out, what does it matter? Like, he only seems to become a good guy because it just allows him to kind of hover more in the film in a kind of a more constructive role, because he's not really looking that dangerous by the time we get to part three. He wouldn't make a great antagonist. But yeah, it's extremely confusing. And then in terms of the spirituality elements, it just starts jumping onto indigenous American shit just because they're kind of like, well, I don't know, we have to be, it's respectful, like, it's not, like, I feel like it's this idea of, like, it's, okay, this is all Christian stuff for white people, but, let's bring in some, like, pure moods elements, and the soundtrack is also pure moods throughout all of these films, as was a danger in the 90s when you started trying to tell the stories of indigenous peoples. And it's just, it's just a hodgepodge of nonsense, which, is placed atop a set of stakes that is unclear to begin with. It's just really goddamn strange film, but not like, it's not compellingly strange. It's just sort of confusing and wandering.
Oh yeah, it's about as compelling as like the hum of an air conditioning unit in an office building. It's basically not...
it's like someone telling you about a really good sandwich. Like, that's what these movies are. They're telling you about a pretty interesting movie you might want to see sometime. And if someone makes it, that might be cool.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And to kind of contextualize all of this too, and we're talking about the stakes, because I wouldn't recommend anyone go out and watch these, but if you're curious, essentially, there is this war in heaven, and somehow one of these angels in one of the warring factions is come into possession of the soul of an American general who did like war crimes in Vietnam. Korea, okay. And the idea here is that because they're angels, they're not very good at fighting, which doesn't make any sense because they seem to like beat the shit out of each other and like rip hearts out of people's chests. But sure, let's go with that. And they're like, we need a real general. So they're going to get this general's soul. And the belief is that the faction that gets this soul can then use the soul to win the war through war strategy.
Why is this guy like the fucking greatest strategist in the history of the world or what?
I mean, you think Napoleon, if he was, America might have won the Korean War.
Yeah, he's not even a general. He's a colonel. He's a colonel in the fucking U.S. Army who just died from the colonel. Like,
who did war crimes?
Why are we pulling like fucking Napoleon? And what does his war crimes have to do with anything? Like, his evil nature is not like fundamental to their plan. They just want him for strategy purposes. So why does he have a fucking suitcase full of faces? I don't fucking know.
I have no idea. It's all very, very strange. And they really do emphasize just how nasty this guy was. But I don't understand.
I wouldn't be surprised if Prophecy 4 or 5 is a prequel telling us the backstory of that general. Like that feels like very much like an avenue they were leaving open. Like, I mean, I guess that's kind of the problem with this entire franchise is that, like, and I don't know if this is the case, but it feels like it was designed so much so as a franchise that they didn't fill anything in. It was like, that's for another movie.
Yeah.
We could go here. We can tell this guy's story. We can fill in the lore. So what you end up with is just literally a movie that's just kind of like a halting point for everything else.
Yeah, 100%. And so, you know, you do have this MacGuffin, and then it's kind of play. It somehow gets hidden inside of a young Native American girl because Eric Stoltz, the angel, is injured. He's going to die. So he hides it in this girl so that, you know, I don't fucking know. But then they're basically chasing this girl around. And then you get all of this Native American mysticism. But then, as Myros pointed out, Satan pops in, played by Viggo Mortensen, who is amazing. Amazing.
Yeah, steals the show.
Steals the show. He's probably only on the screen for less than 10 minutes, but like his whole thing is, it's like he was watching the dailies. He's like, damn, Christopher Walken's going big. I got to go bigger. So that's what he's doing the whole time.
Outwalks Walken.
Yeah. Yeah. So then the movie's like, and Satan's whole thing is like, well, Christopher Walken can't win the Heaven War because if he does, then Heaven will become Hell too. And he only wants one hell because, you know, it'll really kind of water down hell if there's two hells. So then, yeah, we side with Satan, and then the soul is released from the girl into the ether, and Christopher Walken is killed, and that's it. But there's no conflict resolution. There's no firm understanding of why this soul is so important. Everything is so wishy-washy. And to your point, Jack, it does feel like a proto version of the current American studio system's idea of establishing a franchise. And then what you end up with is a series of films that in isolation they feel like just preludes to another thing that's going to come later. And you never get a full picture of what's going on.
Yeah. It'd be one thing if they actually followed through with like expanding out the world, but really they just kind of made the same movie three times in the fucking row and never explained anything.
Yeah. The attention to detail in the first one too, like the story, we've talked about the soul of the general, which seems an insane plot mechanic within this whole, I mean, if we're talking about the majesty of the angels and so on, like we're looking for one shitty dude with some military experiences. Like, how hard could that be to find, like, honestly, across the whole world? But anyhow, we also have Mortensen shows up in his fantastic scenery chewing role, and he's absolutely the highlight as Satan. And we understand that Satan, we can back Satan because he's basically, he left God's light before any of this happened. He was the first fallen angel. So he's like, he's indifferent to the war otherwise. You know, he's got his own thing to protect. So that's kind of an interesting idea. You know, he's not invested in the rest of it. He's almost like an outsider to this angel outside thing. You know, we don't understand the angels. Lucifer is his own separate thing. But like his advice to our protagonist, who, by the way, our protagonist goes from the priest to cop pipeline, which is a lesser explored pipeline in 90s genre movie, and indeed all of the decades of genre movie. You don't get a lot of lapsed priests who go into law enforcement. Maybe we should. Seems like it could be really, really fucking funny and stupid. Much funnier than this is. But Lucifer's advice to him is to harness Gabriel, who's Christopher Walken's angel, to harness his doubt, to play on it. He has doubts about whether or not he can win. We get to, you know, leverage that in his mind. You know, he thinks he's so superior, and that's Lucifer's sage advice to our hero. And so far as I'm aware, what our hero actually does, he drives a car into the back of Gabriel's head, is what actually stops him, which doesn't seem like leveraging doubt so much as just driving a car into the back of someone's head, which nominally would stop a lot of people from doing things, or certainly at least interrupt them. The film doesn't even seem like it's thought out its own internal mechanics. It's just sort of like, oh, we need an action sequence a bit, and the action sequence, the grand sequence, is literally just a car going through a wall, which is
the second time this has happened in the film. I don't even understand what happens. I guess
who was driving that first car?
I have no idea. Was it angel powered? I have no fucking idea. A guy just flies out the window.
Angels can't drive. That's like a major recurring thing for some reason.
Right, they can't drive. But I thought it must have meant magically fucking power to plow him down in the alley, because there's no other explanation.
it's true. Yeah, and I mean, it's a well played. I mean, other than to say that maybe in New York or whatever, L.A. I don't even remember what city this is set in.
People just slam into a fucking back alley.
Yeah, yeah, at any point in the back alley.
They're in fucking Phoenix, Arizona or something.
Well, they move out to
LA too.
Yeah, I think it's LA probably. It's very non-distinct, but it seems like the whole thing. There's so many scenes of this that are just cars going fast in alleys. Of course, all three movies. That's like the big action set piece of the Prophecy franchise, is a man driving in a narrow alley quickly. These are three TV movies. One of them doesn't know us. The other two very much know their TV movies.
Well, this is why I'm going to get behind Elias Koteas. Steve says he's awful here, but he seems to be the only one who knows what this movie is, which is a piece of shit. So he's just here to fucking collect his paycheck and be out of his way.
I mean, Walken is doing Walken. I like... He's what's really funny to me about him in these movies is that, like, honestly, I think he tries a little harder in part one, but by the time we get to part two, he is I always think one of the funniest Christopher Walken roles I've ever seen is anyone who may have been into video games in the 90s and that kind of full motion video explosion when like CD games came out and you could get they realized you could just dump. You could just make a game full of shitty compressed video and it would take up 7 CDs, but people would buy it because it seemed cool. And I would buy it because I thought that was pretty cool myself. And Christopher Walken was in one of those games called Ripper. And in that, he plays a nasty detective. He's a mean-spirited dude and he's very threatening. And he's very kind of like gruff and ill-tempered. And what's really funny to me is that it's the exact same performance as him playing Archangel Gabriel in the Prophecies 2 and 3 and mostly 1. It's just Christopher Walken playing himself and just showing up and being a little bit kind of like off-tempo and strange. I figure like Walken must be a difficult guy to work alongside, I feel like, for other actors. Just and not like purposefully or anything, just that he just brings such a weird tempo to every scene. It must be really difficult to play off him, but I guess, it works. Part of being an actor is figuring out how to make that work, and it's not Walken's fault. What Walken is bringing is that specific energy. But like, it's just how nondescript are these films? It's that literally, if you put a fucking detective's badge on Christopher Walken throughout these three movies, he's a detective and he's mean. It's the same thing. It just doesn't matter. And it's the most thing for most of the angels. I mean, the first one has a couple of cool special effects elements where we have that one angel who's mowed down in an alley by a car or driven by an unknown perpetrator. And yeah, he has no eyes. He's got like big scarring and stuff. And they're all like, oh, he's all messed up. And obviously they realized later on, it's like, oh, that's far too expensive. How about if angels looked far more like just regular people? So much like regular people. They are just regular people. And we never get that again, which is why I think part one is kind of like, you know, a horror movie ostensibly, but then parts two and three just turn into action movies. They're just kind of like guys doing wire foo, but kind of on a budget, on a very tight shooting schedule.
Not a lot of action going on.
It's
odd. And then all the little flourishes that you kind of forget about, and it's like they exist just to give Walken some sidekicks, like a little comic relief and a heavy, but none of his heavies are very heavy. Angels have the ability to resurrect recently dead people as like zombie slaves, I guess.
Or using your Dracula parallel as
Renfield.
Renfield.
Yeah, Renfield. They everybody gets their own little Renfield. And so Walken does that throughout the movies. But it's weird because, especially with the first prophecy, and I guess through two and three, they want you to take these movies seriously. They want to be taken at face value as serious action horror films. But then you've got all this goofball shit, like, you know, Christopher Walken, he's Gabriel, so he's got his little fucking horn. And here he is with his like Miles Davis trumpet and just going and just blasting through windows. It's kind of the most fun scene in the movie. Yeah, it is. That helped me. Yeah, I perked up a little bit then. But
I have a separate choice for most fun, but we'll get to that.
It's great because, but like Walken he's hamming it up, especially in the first movie. And anytime that he's on screen, there's a little bit of a spark and you're probably going to get a chuckle and something cool is going to happen. But the moment that he's gone and it's just fucking Elias Koteas and Virginia Madsen farting around, all the steam is taken out. It's just gone. Nothing.
Well, it's because this movie does like a remarkable job at doing zero work. Like it's supposed to be about Elias Koteas' crisis of faith, which is spurred on by the fact that he sees a vision of the angel war when he's being named a priest or something. I don't have any fucking idea, but it never does any legwork on that front. You don't see him like regaining his faith or really understand why he fundamentally lost his faith in the first place.
And why he became by the end of the movie, I think, based on it.
Oh, yeah. The priest to cop pipeline. He went from molesting children to killing them on the streets.
Yeah. I by the end of the movie, it seems as if we're led to believe that Virginia Madsen and Elias Koteas have like fallen in love. But there's certainly like, not even like 1 ounce of that in the fucking movie.
No. You witness essentially the entirety, the fabric of your understanding of the universe is torn apart in a vision, and so he leaves the priesthood. Makes perfect sense. Priesthood no longer matters when there's a war in heaven, but he just decides he's just going to become a gritty detective. It's like, to do what? To help who? How would any of this matter? Like, you probably just go and kill yourself.
I don't even know if it does make sense to me, because it at the very least is confirmation of a higher power, right? You're like, I'm on the right path, I guess.
That's true. I mean, there's those elements too. Yeah. I think this is a good point to bring up as well, because my favorite scene in these movies, I think, honestly, has to do with another recurring character threat, which is Steve Heitner, best known, of course, as Vanya in Seinfeld, who shows up in a kind of comedy role. I don't know, it's uncertain. He's like the world weary mortician who's seen it all, and he jokes about dead bodies and stuff, but he's also a detective. It becomes unclear. There's a great scene though in part three, which is really just an info dump if you've never seen parts 2, 1, and 2, or you just need them re-explained, because it's very hard to withhold or maintain any information from any of these movies. The second you watch one of these movies, you will not remember anything about it. So thankfully they have Heitner in part 3 doing his research, and he's just in what looks to be like the police evidence room. Like, it's not very, like, I don't know, maybe it's supposed to be a library, but it just looks like a file room. And he's just found a bunch of files that apparently lay out the entire war in heaven, even though humans don't know about it. And he's just writing stuff down. He just writes down like genocide, Nephilim, and throughout the whole thing it just cuts back to him just looking absolutely bewildered, not just by his own the fruits of his own discussion or discovery, I guess, but also I think just by why am I in the prophecy 3, And it's just a really funny scene, but it's hard to explain. It's just like this wonderfully condensed kind of like, fuck it, here's everything you need. We're going to move on from this afterwards and just do whatever we're going to do in this movie. But he sells it. It's just really entertaining because it also highlights, I think, how little it matters. It really doesn't matter what anything in any of these films is. Like, I think part of it is like Nephilim. It's like, have you heard of those? It's like, if you haven't, then maybe this seems like exciting and interesting. But if you have, who cares? Like, it's just because guess what the Nephilim is? It's just a guy in a trench coat as well.
It is. Yeah. It is. I do love the dumb baby shit in part two where it really is just Terminator, and you get Eric Stoltz or not Eric Stoltz. You get Eric Roberts instead of Eric Stoltz. But like the baby thing, so Jessica Biel is the female lead.
Jennifer
in this one.
Biel.
And yeah. Jennifer Biel, not Jessica Biel. Jesus Christ. No, that's a Texas Chainsaw remake. Jennifer Biel. And it's so weird because she's supposed to be playing, I think, like a young virginal nurse. But Jennifer Biel at this point in the late 90s, she has to be somewhere between like 35 and 40, right?
Yeah.
And that's the whole thing is like she meets this angel and she loses her virginity to him.
I mean, it's Hispanic Catholic family. I mean, this may not be the grandest stretch other than the fact that obviously Jennifer Biel is she's probably been fending off the guys. It just seems a
the part that I don't get though is she's in the first movie. We learn that a fun feature of the angels, and we just learned this from the coroner, is they've got both sex parts. You know, yeah. You got a penis, you got a vagina. Yeah, they're just hanging out together. So Jennifer Biel, she bangs this angel, and she's like, "Wow, that was great." But at no point is she like, "I wasn't expecting that." That
she doesn't. She has nothing to reference against.
Well, he has eyes, so I just think we've got to cast aside.
Angel continuity may not hold up to this thing.
True. The thing about the second movie, and this ties in with Jack's through line, is the whole thing is they're like going around killing people who know about the angels at the beginning, right? Like. That's what ostensibly happens to Elias Koteas, even though he seems to be like settling into a more normal life. He immediately becomes a monk again or something. And
played by Bruce Abbott of Reanimator. Yes. Yeah. Koteas was too busy doing Crash or something, probably.
Right. But the angels go and hunt him down. And then we get this Banya scene in the second film. And immediately following that, one of these like Terminator angels blows up a van that's like that says like coroner on the side, and I'm like, well, exit Banya. He was clearly killed here, and he's just in the third movie anyway.
Maybe just resurrected. Yeah. Who knows? The supporting cast, again suggests like we have Brittany Murphy in the second one is the resurrected sidekick of Gabriel.
It's an upgrade.
Yeah, definitely. I think Adam Goldstein is then the first one who's
Adam
like
Goldberg, and then Goldberg. Amanda Plummer completely wasted. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. And mm-hmm. then in second, we have Brittany Murphy, and Brittany Murphy was just off of Drive in this. And there's kind of like she just, you know, she's obviously clueless. She'd done a couple of things. Drive, I think, really, for anyone who saw it, I think really hammered home her comedic chops on top of like Clueless that she has, you know, she was a star in the making, I think. And they kind of bring her in.
It showed the director, you know, we need someone who can drive. So we got.
Right, that's true. Yeah, absolutely. Because angels can't drive. Right. They need
angels
a driver.
Can't drive.
Like literally, they just.
Until the third movie. How does Walk and Learn to Drive in the third movie? Like he gets his
little
fucking
human,
driver's license.
Isn't he? He becomes human.
Because
that's the end of two, isn't it? He gets turned into a human. Or some bullshit, I don't know.
He's got that great fucking wig in part three.
He does, which is, more than human. But, like, Brittany and, or, like, Murphy and Walken are definitely the highlight of that. And it's kind of like, there's, like, one scene where she tries to kill herself again. And it's just with Walken just kind of, like, watching her kill herself again. But she can't because she's been resurrected. And, like, there's these real comedy beat between them. Like, they're good together, and you just wish the film had found more to do with it. But it can't really be a comedy because it's very serious. And it's just a struggle in these films. It's like they really have talented cast and crew throughout. Like, there really is a lot of like pretty good people in here doing decent work ostensibly, but like there's no film for them. There's nothing to hang any of what they're doing on, and none of it matters. And it just kind of becomes depressing by the time you get around to part three. It's just like, oh man, everyone here should have more work. Like, we were discussing before we started, it's like, why is Walken in the Prophecy Part 3? His role is greatly reduced, but like, why was Walken showing up? Like, his career was back on the upswing by the late 90s. Why was he doing Prophecy 3? Maybe they only need him for like 3 days. I don't know.
I think, and this is the theory that I floated earlier, but I'm almost 100% positive he probably signed a 3-film deal. And I'm sure that the studio that released the original Prophecy thought that this was going to be the biggest shit ever, and then it wasn't. But
what studio is that, Steve?
I don't. Is this a Dimension Miramax film?
It's Miramax, baby. It's Weinstein.
Weinstein.
Those Weinsteins are all over this thing.
They love it. They love it. They're like, this is going
to
be huge.
Yeah, to the point that I think the first one was shot like 2 years prior to release. I think the Weinstein sat on it for a while. So
I can't imagine why, because they fucking like, whoops, we bought this without reading the script.
yeah. Well, and then by the time you get to 2 and 3, God, Walken is just he's sleepwalking through these.
Oh yeah,
and he's still great, but it's not the same level of energy. You can tell that he knows that he's not making the next great franchise anymore.
Well, you guys have you can't skip the best part about 2. I feel is that in the scene that is in every one of these movies, where you've got, you know, we open on a shadowy figure walking around in a duster who eventually finds his way into a scumbag apartment, and then some other shadowy figure in a trench coat like flies through a window and attacks them. And in the second film, that shadowy figure is none other than Glenn Danzig.
Yeah, which kicks ass.
But like I said, films full of talented, interesting people doing the best. Yeah. You know, doing their
best. I wonder
if
this is what do you think? Like Veronica was inspired by his.
But
what
I'll tell you is, I saw the Prophecy like 4 days ago, and I saw Veronica like 2 years ago, and I remember more of Veronica.
Did you watch his follow up to Veronica? I mean, it's not.
I haven't. No, not yet.
I've seen a video on it. And it sounds like the most insane thing ever, where he just like completely fucks the audio.
I'm just still really mad that weird. I didn't go, because Veronica premiered at the Music Box right down by my house. I could have got a ticket. I didn't think of it at the time, and that was when Glenn Danzig learned he'd made a comedy, because the audience were howling throughout it, having apparently a great time. They were laughing their asses off, and there was a Q&A with Danzig, and he came out and he was like, well, you guys laughed a little more than I thought you would.
Poor Danzig. He's been the butt of every single joke for like 20 years. Do you know about the whole like Glenn Danzig brick saga? Are you familiar with that?
Oh, yeah.
I am not. Is this a wrestling thing?
No. This is like an internet thing. This is like an early internet, but like internet 20 years ago thing. But basically, Danzig's got this big dumb house in LA. And for the longest time, he had this giant pile of bricks in his front yard. And like people kept trying to like call the city on him and get him in trouble. And so, but he would never move the bricks or get rid of the bricks. And then at one point he took the bricks and just moved the pile to a different side of the yard. It's this whole thing where it's just been like meticulously documented on the internet between like 2006 and 2010, like Danzig brick updates and all this shit. It's fucking weird. I think he doesn't live there anymore. I think he sold the house, but
Matt, you think the Danzig stuff is,
yeah, that's a good question too. Did the bricks come with the home? You'd have to ask the new owners. But you know, say what you will about the Prophecy 2 and 3 or even Prophecy 1, but they have all the elements that make a movie a movie.
Except for a plot,
yeah, except for a plot, but it's trying to find one. with Danzig, it's fun because when he makes a movie, it's a great reminder that film is this medium where it's, you know, it's visual, but it's also, it's the sound, it's the acting, it's the story, it's all these different elements kind of working together in harmony to create something beautiful. And with Danzig, it's like he's baking a loaf of bread, but he forgot flour, and it's fucking awesome. So yeah, with his new movie, it's just like, there's no music and it's weird. And then the other thing is like, it's really a testament to the importance of editing and creating a rhythm with a film, because every single shot, and this is something he does in Veronica too, it lingers 2 to 3 seconds longer than it probably should. And that doesn't sound so bad, but then in practice, when you're watching, you're like, this is like the most, like, just viscerally upsetting thing I have ever experienced in my life. So yeah, that's Danzig. But he's great in this, great in Prophecy too. What a guy.
Oh yeah.
Doesn't last long.
Doesn't last long.
You know, so it is. I mean, such it is when there's a war between the angels.
Also, like, Eric Roberts is funny too, because he's just a guy who's been 60 years old for like 30 years, right? He's kind of like Patrick Stewart. Like, if you see Patrick Stewart in, I don't know, like a movie in like the early 80s, you're like, oh shit, he looks exactly the same. How long has he been 60? And that's where Eric Roberts is at in his life. So good for him, I guess.
Yeah, they said that honestly, as much as Patrick Stewart would be in anything, Eric Roberts has him beat. I think Eric Roberts would be in this podcast if we gave him 20
bucks. 100% would be. And you think if they called him up tomorrow and were like, we need you to reprise your role for Prophecy 6, he wouldn't sign on the fucking dotted line immediately?
Oh, he would be there. He probably brings his own lunch.
First in line, baby.
I'm just like, this man is a pro. And don't get me wrong, I love this about Eric Roberts.
Me too. Fucking stalked by my doctor kicks ass. I mean, Myros hates it because he's a fucking Philistine. But
I put it over. You can just say I hate it.
Eric Roberts is stalked by my doctor's guy. He should do a crossover, stalked by an angel.
Well, that's one of the things that happens in these movies. They use the literal phrase raped by an angel, I think. Or maybe I just put it together because someone is raped by an angel technically at one point. And I'm just like, oh man, that's a great series of ridiculous Wong Jing movies that I really enjoyed that are way better than this.
Watching.
And frankly, have far less to do with the title than they are, like, about as much to do. They're about as much about a war in heaven as these movies are.
We're gonna have to do another Hong Kong grab bag episode. And
Have you ever seen Rape by an Angel?
I have not. No.
Oh boy, you should check that one out, because it's one of those movies that has a plot twist in it that you kind of see coming, but you're like, surely they are not going to do that. That would be so distasteful. Oh, they do it. Yeah. It's great.
Well, don't really worry. I'm sure we'll cover it eventually alongside Glenn Danzig's films. Yeah, these are all coming down the pike.
2024 is young yet.
Yeah. I don't know if there's much more to say about these other than I guess part three is probably the worst, but then it also kind of swerves back into stupid in ways that I kind of like they reprise the role of the Native American child from the first movie, and they have her as like a little ghost entity, and then the aforementioned hair on Walken is just otherworldly.
It's a beautiful mane in this one, for sure.
It's some real fucking spirit Halloween shit that they just bolted to his head.
I really love part three. Phenomenal. Part three has like these callbacks, because he goes to the same diner he goes to in part one, and the waitress is the same actress. And then they bring back the girl from the first one, and she's quite a bit older at this point, obviously, because, you know, you grow notably in those years. But like, they bring her back, and it's kind of like, who's this for? Like, who's the audience cheering? It's like, it's the waitress from the Prophecy. Like, who gives a shit? Who cares?
They really call it out. They're very proud of that moment, too, because there's even a line where Walken's like, oh, you've got a good memory.
It's like
ha, ha, ha. All those Prophecy heads out there fucking love it, man.
It's like David Gordon Green's Prophecy 3.
He left Exorcist. He's open. Surely he's got the time. Frankly, maybe this is the one he should go at, because frankly, you know, it's rough when you take on Halloween with actual high points, or The Exorcist, you know, with really good films, and you try and tack on your own bullshit at the end. I mean, if David Gordon Green's The Prophecy, what's it going to be? Worse than The Prophecy? Probably, but it's going to be a much lower, like, smaller gap in quality. I think maybe that's what he should be doing, is picking... Like, this one seems rife for remaking, because no one surely feels particularly fondly towards these. Maybe a bit of nostalgia, but I think even people who enjoy these movies are probably going to have to acknowledge they're not very good.
Yeah, they're not. And there's enough there where, as I mentioned this earlier, you have all these good individual elements on paper that just don't coalesce into anything worth a shit. So yeah, you could remake The Prophecy and probably make something decent.
I want to see Choi Hawk remake this thing. Just a big CG fucking heaven battle fest. that would kick ass. I'd be on board.
Yeah, that would kick ass. Meanwhile, in The Prophecy, all like the closest we get to seeing the battle in heaven is they have this like weird like stop motion rear projection scene for all of 5 seconds where they're in like a Native American cave. And there's some sort of like vision shit going on.
Talk about Terminator. It's like, what if Terminator was the least interesting thing I've ever fucking seen? Like, they show the future war and it's just like a fucking robot skull sitting on the ground and nothing the fuck else.
Nothing else. Nothing else. That's all you need. Yeah. And then the other thing is, too, is I feel like after The Prophecy 1 didn't do what they expected it to do, Weinstein just... he just stripped these things down to the fucking studs. So if you look at like who directed and who helped write the second one, well, you replace the Highlander guy with Greg Spence. You know what he's known for? Absolutely fucking nothing as a director. He's mostly a producer. The only other movie that he directed was in 1996. He did the direct to video Children of the Corn Part 4, The Gathering, which is noteworthy because it's got Naomi Watts in it. So that's
I've heard tell that's the good one. I don't know if I believe that.
Coming soon.
Yeah, we'll find out soon enough, right? Now, Prophecy 3, which for my money, and this is like it's six in one hand, half dozen in the other. I think Prophecy 3 is the worst. And this one is actually directed by Patrick Lussier.
The king. The king of 3D horror.
The fucking king of 3D horror. Exactly. This
is
like
he's Craven's protege. I mean, Wes Craven's editor, I think.
Yeah. Which this one is it's a real pile of dog shit. So
I know. I saw him in the credits and I was like, okay, we're going to get an uptick because 2 is just so fucking boring. I was like, Lussier, he knows how to make a fun, dumb movie. Here. Nope.
Yeah.
I think he tried. It was probably his pitch to bring in fucking Brad Dourif, and Brad Dourif gave him about fucking 90 minutes to film this part of the movie.
Yeah. And
yeah, I mean, part 3 is Koichi Sakamoto, too, for the action. So I thought, like, you know, it's like, okay, Koichi Sakamoto can do great stuff with action if he's allowed. But this, it reminds me, funny enough, I think about, like, it brings me back to like the days when I saw Drive sometime in, I guess, the late 90s, and I thought it was amazing, and Mark Dacascos seemed like he was going to be the next big thing. And then on Irish TV, watch it arrive, but The Crow, Stairway to Heaven, I think was the name of the TV series, starring Mark Dacascos. And I was like, fucking hey, this is going to rock, because Mark Dacascos is a goddamn martial arts super genius, and it's The Crow. What could go wrong? And I watched every episode of that goddamn show that aired for the season, I guess. I don't know how much of it was made. Tuned in every single week, because obviously I was a teenager. I had very little else to do, to be fair. And not once did anything exciting happen with the action. It was like nothing ever. I'm like, the fights, every time they'd square off, it's like, this is going to be the time. He's going to do something cool, you know, and no, nothing. And based this Prophecy 3 is the same thing. It's like Koichi Sakamoto on action. And it's like, they didn't give him any time or resources. There's like one scene where some guys jump over a fence and it's wire assisted. There's one pretty good stunt where a guy gets flung through a semi trailer door. You know, that's kind of funny in context, but it's like it's very much like TV action. Like they probably did all the stunt work in a day. It's just nothing, and still probably the highlight of the films. So yeah, I don't think there was anything to make out of these movies. I feel like they probably could have done better by just turning it into like weird skeevy like religion porn. Like they're like more just angels trying to hook up with busty ladies, get naked, and just hiring actresses accordingly. I think that probably would have made for a more sensible, like more coherent franchise structure. But I'm guessing they were just like, no, it's too serious. We can't do that. Maybe Whedon is something in his contract. It's like, no, you can't make my Angel movie even shittier or better. That's my theory. Yeah.
I don't know. All these, I mean, listen, my big takeaway is eBay is going to have a box set soon.
Two.
Yeah, sign up for our Patreon.
Yeah, sign up for our Patreon. I'll fucking send it to you next week. Let's do it. All right.
In
well,
4K,
we should probably,
guys.
In 4K, no less.
It looks great. I mean, it's good looking box
does.
Set.
It looks fantastic.
Nice.
Yeah, the whole set is good. If only the movies weren't trash. I mean, this is, but I mean, that's the beauty
of
Vinegar
Syndrome.
We got
a real scanner cop scenario on our hands. It looks great.
This is a scanner cop scenario.
Give me scanner cop any goddamn day of the week.
All right. Myros, what are you putting over this week?
As per usual, I watch nothing, but you know, we're talking about how these movies are basically Terminator ripoffs, and we're talking about the king himself, Patrick Lussier. You know, he took another crack at the Terminator concept at some point. He's actually one of the credited writers on the best post T2 Terminator sequel, one of the dumbest and most fun films. You can find, frankly, and that is Terminator Genesis.
You're putting over Terminator Genesis.
Terminator Genesis fucking rules, and I won't
it's
hear anything
else. It's got that fucking
else.
Khaleesi in it, man.
It's yeah, goddamn, it's goddamn stupid as shit and a ton of fun. Yeah, I'm putting it over. I'll put it over any week. Terminator Genesis. Yeah. It rules.
I'm putting over the way they spelled Genesis, because isn't it with like a Y? Is it?
Yeah, it is with a Y.
Genesis.
Well.
All right, Jack, what are you putting over?
You know,
don't
I'm,
say
I'm,
fucking
I'm,
Terminator 3.
Yeah, yeah. I'm trying to remember if I've seen Genesis. I don't know if I have. I think that was where I tapped out just before that. So maybe I'll take
well,
Adam.
I can't blame you because Terminator Salvation is one of the hardest movies to get through I've seen.
Yeah,
ever
I think I Genesis is that one.
Is a hard pivot into dumb bullshit that is yeah. quite a joy.
That would be
T3's
welcome.
Okay. It's got that like coffin flop scene where he takes the machine gun out of the coffin.
Yeah,
that's
yeah it's not the worst.
Yeah, I mean, listen, no, do big stunts in that one. They had the yeah. money too. I mean, well, actually, all of the money. I mean, these are like the most expensive independent films on earth, aren't they? Terminator went independent mm-hmm. technically, and they're spending like $200 million making this crap. Yeah. But
I like indie films like Terminator Genesis.
Exactly. That's what we're all about. They should win at like the Spirit Awards.
I know. Just fucking Terminator Genesis beats out Past Lives. I hope so. That'd be
I mean, I'd it should. It's better than that
it
movie.
Should, yeah.
Yeah, great. I'm going to put over the Oscars later tonight where I won't be watching because I never watch it. But I hope everyone has a great time.
Yeah,
I hope
yeah,
someone else famous slaps someone other who like some other famous person. I really hope that should become an annual thing.
Yeah, you got to hit somebody famous. I think that's good. Timothy Chalamet just getting the fucking taste slapped out of his mouth. I would love to see that.
Oh,
that'd
be great. That would be
his little
great
fucking
TV.
Wonka suit.
I'm going to go off on a tangent with Christopher Walken, but it's a movie. It's not Christopher Walken, but it put me in mind because Walken was great in the 90s as well, starring in films from Abel Ferrara, particularly King of New York. And then also in The Addiction, he has an incredible small role in The Addiction's a masterpiece. Mm-hmm. But I'm not going to put that over because that's not one I've seen recently. What I am going to put over is Ms. 45 from Abel Ferrara
hell yeah.
from 1981, which is a movie I caught on TV years and years and years ago before I would consider myself a movie buff, and I had no idea who anyone was. I didn't know who Abel Ferrara was or who any of these people were, and it was just one of those movies. I just watched it and I was just like, even knowing nothing, I was like, holy shit, this movie is like, it's sparse and it's fucking prickly and insane. Like it's mm-hmm. just going for it, and it's just stuck in my mind for like 20 plus years. So last weekend, I finally got around to rewatching it, and I'm glad to report it really holds up. It's incredible. So,
no.
I mean, anyone who's seen it knows this, but if you haven't seen Ms. 45, it's like 80 minutes long. Track down a copy, because it's a great way to spend 80 minutes.
Yeah, and I think, God, who put out, there is a Blu-ray, but I think it might be out of print at this point, but I think Drafthouse Films
yes, I think so.
which actually bodes well because I'm pretty sure Vinegar Syndrome has the rights to most of the Draft House stuff. I could be wrong. Someone can tell me if I'm wrong.
That would be a great pick to put out.
That would be a nice one.
That would be a 4K lavish edition. I wouldn't be putting on eBay if they handed it to me.
Yeah, maybe we'll get a 4K version of Dangerous Men after that. That'd be good too. Have you seen Dangerous Men, Jack?
I have not. No, is that a good one?
Well, I think I have an idea for an episode coming up.
Ah, shit. This
Myros,
is how this always
happens. Are you excited to rewatch Dangerous Men?
Future episodes. If you want to know where the Crow series went wrong, rest assured again.
The goal here was the prophecy was basically this episode has turned into just insights into Optimism Vaccine's 2024 calendar.
We call them prophecies, Jack, not insights.
Yeah, these are prophecies.
The future of the podcast.
The prophecy. They're all called the prophecy two, the prophecy three. So
wait, is there even
prophecy.
A single fucking prophecy in these movies?
No,
no,
no. Other than that, the angels. Well, yeah, no, there's none. There's not even probably like they're actively scheming. It's not like anyone knows who's going
to
win.
I like how we're trying to put things over and close it up. We're like, no, we got to go back to the prophecy. Is it the third one or is the second one where there's a book of prophecies and the book writes its own prophecies?
Oh, God, I must have just fucking fallen asleep
on
that.
Sure like that.
The first thing, the only thing I remember is Elias Koteas has that illuminated manuscript that has like a missing chapter of Revelation or something. But that's quite the prop.
Well, yeah,
it's an illuminated manuscript.
Angel has an extra chapter of the Book of End Times that the regular Bible doesn't have.
Well, I thought it was supposed to be the full Bible because it's. But either way, the prop is trash because it's supposed to be like this elaborate illuminated manuscript and it has like 20 words on a page and it's supposed to be the Bible. It's like the size of a fucking coloring book or something. I'm like, what?
It's great.
Production designer got tired.
Yeah,
it's hard, man. It's fucking hard. All right. Well, I'm putting over there's a new album from the band Pissed Jeans. That's right. There's a band called Pissed Jeans. It's not just a lifestyle. It's not just something that Adam Myros deals with every single day. It's a band. It's a punk band. They're great. Their new album's called Half Divorced. I think it's the best record they probably put out in a decade. They're fun. They got a good sense of humor. Aggressive chainsaw like guitars. And the lyrics are amazing because they're relatable. They're about losing your hair and having a boring job, things like that. You know, it's not this like snot-nosed, I'm an 18-year-old kid writing punk song shit. This is real old man stuff. So it's great. Go check it out. And other than that, if you have any questions, comments, death threats, marriage proposals, etc., optimismvaccine@gmail.com. Also, you can tweet at us at optimismvaccine and... Guess what? There's a link in the description of this podcast where you can give us money. Why do you want to give us money? Because maybe I'll send you my prophecy box set because I don't fucking want it. Okay. If you live in the continental United States, you give us money on our Patreon, any amount, I will send you a movie from my personal collection in the mail. Very exciting for you. Also, you'll get access to our exclusive patron feed, new monthly episodes that are just for patrons, plus a whole back catalog of old episodes and written content, all kinds of stuff for you to dig through. That's there for you. Now, if you want to donate at a higher level, okay, you want to hit that $5 tier, then you get to vote on future episodes. Very exciting. Do you want us to watch Dangerous Men next week? Maybe we will. Pay us $25. And you know what? That can be what we do because... Yes, for $25, a small sum, really, you can choose an entire episode. Also, Myros, I realize I'm jumping around a little bit here because normally I have all this stuff written down. I'm just trying to do it from memory. If you're five and above, you get your name written out or read out on the air. Who are our five and above patrons right now?
I was just wondering why Eric Stoltz's character's name is Simon in the first film. Like, that's Simon not Peter? An angel's name. That's like Peter. He's not an angel. Not an angel. Come on, movie. Get it right. I mean, you went so far as to call Elias Koteas Thomas. Is it? Of course, he's the doubting Thomas. But, yeah. Well, anyway, Steve's going to send you this box set, not because he doesn't want it, but because it's extremely valuable. This is sent out to members only.
It's worth like $60.
Yeah, you're getting a great value if you sign up today. And you will also have your name read on air like this month's patrons, David, Evan, Ryan, Dustin, and Paula.
Mm-hmm. There you go. All great people. Do you have a favorite angel name, Myros? I'm a fan of Abaddon, personally.
Oh, like the wrestler.
Yeah.
You mean like the boss in Final Fantasy VIII? Yeah.
I don't put much thought into it. Which one does Della Reese play?
That's the touched one. Tess. Tess is a good angel name. Did I ever tell you guys? I do have one angel story. So, Myros, a gal that you actually know.
Sure.
We hung out with her in college, and her sister dated our friend Adam for a while. Not you, the other Adam. You know who I'm talking about. So this is a real person. But anyways, I'm not friends with this person anymore because you just through social media, you kind of you see people's lives that you don't really care about. And she had a baby recently, and she named her baby Gabriel. And I think she wanted like an angel name for the middle name too. So I'm guessing she just Googled angel names. And then if you do that, it probably comes up like alphabetically. And so she made her baby's middle name Abaddon, which I think is the funniest fucking shit possible, because that's literally like it means like destroyer. It's the angel of death. Like your fucking child is the angel of death. It's metal as fuck. But that's not who this person is. So it's just amazing.
I mean, yeah, maybe that kid can grow into it. That would be pretty cool.
It's fucking sick. Like if I had a kid, God, let's hope not. But yeah, I'd be like, this is Steve Jr., middle name Beelzebub. Let's fucking go. Like, that's cool. But yeah, anyways, if you have any angel names or anything that you want to share with us, go ahead. OptimismVaccine@gmail.com. We'll be there. And we will be back next week with hopefully some better movies.